popping up the champagne. Pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you been. Pour yourself something cold, baby.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there, and welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily on a beautiful Friday here in Berea. Nathan Zagura with Sir Andrew Gribble in for Matt Wilhelm today. What's up, Gribbs?
What's going on? It's a good Friday.
It is a good Friday. It was not a great Thursday night. Obviously, we can jump right in on that. And Gibbs, I want you as well to talk about this, the Cavaliers. So I know that I grew up in the Bay Area. I was a Run TMC Warriors fan, not that much of this group of the Warriors fan. Obviously, if Cavs season ticket holder, I'm into the Cavs, rooting for the Cavs. There's no question about my allegiance there. The only question would be, like, at the end of the day, if I had an ideal world, I'd want the Browns to be the first team to win a championship for Cleveland. But I know that when the Browns do win a championship, it's going to blow any other possible scenario out of the water. And I want it for Cleveland. I think Cleveland needs it and deserves it. So I'm all in with the Cleveland Cavaliers this year. But watching that game last night, I did not come away with a good feeling, because I was very upset with all these analytics people, all these smart people who were saying that, you know, it was 70% chance or better that the Warriors won the series, and I felt that was disrespectful. We've got LeBron, we've got Kyrie, we've got Love. And then you watch the game, and Steph Curry played like crap. I mean, he was awful. His body language was awful. Everything about his game was awful. Missing wide open shots, missing layups, turning the ball over. He was awful. Klay wasn't much better, and their bench was phenomenal. But coming out of that, thinking that we got competitive for a second. I think we took one lead in the second half for 1 point, and then they ran off 15 straight. Mm-hmm. To lose double figures and really have it be basically 20 when it was all said and done. I know it was 15 at the end of the day. In a game where Curry and Klay are not even shooting 30% from the floor, does not make me feel good about the future.
No, but I'm going to try to spin this. I'm going to
spin it.
Okay, first off, I'm going to rewind to last year, where after game one of last year, that's about as bad as I felt after a Cleveland sporting event in a long time. Because not only did you blow a winnable game last year, you also saw Kyrie Irving go down, and it just seemed like everything was bleak and over and terrible and that they were going to get swept. They didn't win the series, but they came back and kind of proved you wrong and kind of played their last gasp and got two wins out of it before getting eliminated. So I feel better after this game.
Okay.
Because you bring up, you know, Klay and Curry are not going to do that again. I'm confident that that bench will not do that again for
so
the Warriors.
I'm confident that Barbosa and Livingston won't go 13 of 15 again.
Livingston's been a problem for the Cavs these last 2 years, I feel like, too.
But, and somebody was saying, well, he's making all these tough shots. When you're significantly taller than whoever's guarding you and their hand is like near your forearm, that's not a contested shot. I know it sounds like a contested shot. It's not a contested shot. That's a wide open shot for him, and he can get that wide open basically free throw line jumper against this team whenever he wants it. That's a problem. Barbosa is a very good player and a very good scorer, and I just think Dele, and I'm all the people are gonna be like, yeah, Dele. Listen, they were minus 19 with Dele on the floor yesterday. Nobody was worse. He can't guard anybody on this Warriors team. And I know last year, he guarded Steph Curry. Steph Curry can guard himself sometimes, and we saw that last night.
Right.
I just think there are a lot of tough matchups for this team from an athletic and size standpoint. And if you're not going to get any – I mean, why is Channing Frye playing only 7 minutes?
That was a head-scratcher for me. I wonder if it's because he's a bad matchup against Draymond, and they used – Draymond a little bit more with their bench crew than they usually do.
They did instead of space. I think that was
an adjustment that I think Lou might have overreacted with that by yanking him pretty early there in the second quarter. I will say this. I think the series is a total reverse of last year. I think last year the Cavs had to win. If they were going to win the series, they had to win it with defense. I just think right now the Warriors are a superior defensive team. The Cavs have to win this with offense. I think the Cavs are in a better situation if this game is getting into the 110s and 120s. Than it was kind of this game was relatively low scoring for what the Cavs have been experiencing throughout the playoffs.
Yes.
Just think you need to come to the realization you're not going to win this series with defense. I think holding the Warriors to 104, I think is that should be a winnable number for you.
Yes.
Because this was a historically great offense in the playoffs up to this point for the Cavs in terms of efficiency. I just think you can't have an offensive effort like did last night. I think you're watching all the replays and the Cavs defense is getting carved apart in vines and everything like that. All my focus is on the offense. You have to fix what's going on there before you can even think about winning this series.
In a game where they won the Battle of the Boards 47-41, they got an extra 9 points at the line. Cavs went 18-20 from the line. The Warriors only attempted 10 free throws in the whole game. The turnovers, 15 versus 9, that's not good, obviously. You know,
transition defense was terrible.
Transition D wasn't great, and really it was just – it's funny, when everything's going well, the Cavs are a great team when everything's going well. They're not a good team. The body language is not good when things are not going well for this team. But when you look at the guys that come in, Iguodala, Livingston, Barbosa, even Varejao came in and 3 minutes did so many Varejao things picked up two fouls, offensive fouls on the Cavs in 3 minutes. A flop, complete flop, ridiculous.
Wasn't a flop when he did it here, though.
It was funny. I was at the bar with the kid and others, and one of the guys in a group next to us was like, we can't get mad at that because that's what he did for us, and we loved it. He's like, you can't get mad at it. I was just Varejao being Varejao. But I don't know. I just didn't come out of that game feeling like our personnel was on par with their personnel.
No, I understand that. And it's a bizarre
and stars
feeling.
Were not good.
Right. It's a bizarre feeling because these teams are almost the same, and if you're looking at both teams, the Cavs are so much significantly improved from what they put on the floor last year, which makes that even weirder to say.
Yeah, and you get 66 out of Irving, James, and Love. 66. And you got a grand total out of Curry and Thompson of 20 points.
I do like the strategy defensively of selling out to stop those guys, though. I'll let Draymond shoot open threes all day if it means, because most of the looks that Thompson and Curry have were not that great. They had a couple open ones.
Steph had a couple that were just like obscenely open that he didn't make.
Right. But I like the philosophy to sell out to stop those guys. I'm okay. If they beat the Cavs with their bench every single night, I can live with that.
So it's interesting. Wilbon, I don't know if you were watching SportsCenter last night after the game, but SVP could not get past what I was talking about. Just Curry and Thompson were, by their standards, awful. And the Warriors won this game easily. And Wilbon was saying, you know, all you can do is look at, you expect Curry and Thompson to be able to win them maybe three games this series. So to have the bench already win them one is pretty daunting if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers, especially in a game where your big three played, relatively speaking, pretty well. 66 points on offense. LeBron had 23, 12, and 9. Kyrie, 26, and 4. And Love had 17 and 13. I mean, those, you're not unhappy, especially with Love's performance, that he played well. But their D is underrated, and their length is underrated.
No,
I think defense.
I think they're clearly the better defensive team in this series, and you're not going to fix that at this point in the season. The Cavs, I'll take a little less from the big three if it means a little more from JR and Tristan Thompson in the starting lineup, because they gave you nothing.
And for LeBron, it's interesting because he gets the ball in the post, but it seems like his only move is just like to be a bull. Like, I'm just going to back you down, go through you, or try to drive and just run right through you. And to not get, I mean, to have J.R. Smith make his only three was late when it really didn't matter. I mean, they cut it from, 14 to 11, I think, at that point. And to have Channing Frye attempt one shot in the whole game, I mean, these guys aren't spacing the floor. Delly was exposed in a big way. I thought Shump looked kind of lost out there as well. All it takes is one game to change the whole narrative. We know that. There are going to be highs and lows. But if you would have told me when watching that game and watching how bad Curry was that the Cavs weren't going to win that game, that seemed to be a very winnable game to me.
Yeah, it was winnable, but it was also at the same time that the Cavs were in that game despite easily their worst offensive performance in the playoffs, I think, to this point, which I've got to think the offense is going to be significantly better in game two. You've got to make adjustments. I think the thing that worried me more about JR was not that he'd made his first three in the fourth quarter. He just wasn't getting looks.
Well, and the wrist, if that was a factor.
I just hope... You've got to get this game higher scoring for the Cavs to be in it. Because I don't know what defensive adjustments the Cavs can make to do better than limiting them to 104 points.
Gibbs, what are you thinking right now?
I think we all need to relax.
So you didn't come out of that game feeling that bad?
No. Okay. I think we all just need to have a little adult beverage or four. We need to sit back and we need to say one game.
It is. Do you feel that this game becomes more of a, I don't want to use the word must win because I don't, you don't, it's not a must win until you're really facing elimination.
Right.
But I would have, it seems to me it is a difficult scenario to envision the Cavs or any team right now beating this Warriors team 4 out of 5 games.
Well, I mean, but see, you got to win 4 of the next 6. It's not 4 of the next 5.
If you lose 4 of the next game 6. Okay. That's what I'm saying. Is this game a must have?
Well, that was a question in the forecast, but I'll update the forecast. I think it's a total must win. You got to get a split. You have to win at least one here. See, if you go down 0-2, I don't like your odds because now you've got to, yeah, to win 4 out of 5 when they have home court advantage, I don't like your odds. I think that Golden State's good enough to come in. They know how to win in our building. They won the championship in our building last year. They won by 40 this year. I mean, our building doesn't intimidate them. Let's put it that way. The only thing that made me nervous was just J.R. Smith and Shumpert. J.R. Smith, if I'm Ty Lue, I would have taken him out of the game. He clearly, every time Golden State got a bucket, he was like exasperated on the floor, throwing his arms up, like just shaking his head. Get out. If you're not helping me, get out. And when the shot's not falling, he forgets how to play defense. And at that point, if he's not getting touches and he's not making his shots and he's not playing defense, why is he in the basketball game?
This is a bad body language series because LeBron, when the things aren't going well, has awful body language.
I would agree.
He's not an uplifting, inspirational leader as much as he's like kind of a pouty leader. JR can have awful body language. And I'll tell you what. Steph Curry's got some of the worst body language I've ever seen. When he's sitting over there in that huddle with his towel on his head, pouting and whining, ugh, drives me nuts. I mean, I'm good. I like it from our standpoint because I want to see it, but this is not a series of a bunch of, I don't know, uplifting, powerful leader type guys.
Since we're scrapping that forecast question, I'm going to weigh in on this. I don't think game 2 is a must win.
So you think that the Cavs still can win the series if they go down 0-2?
Yeah, because I think coming into the series, I think every home game is a must win for the Cavs. You lose at home, I think the series is over. No matter if it's 1-1 or even if you come back game 3 and 4 and split those. I don't think you can split those because you don't want to get to the game 7 in Oakland.
See, I don't think you can afford to go back to Cleveland down 0-2.
But I think if you can hold court at home, then you're going in with momentum to game 5. That was the swing game in last year's series, too.
I know, but if you go 2-2 and then they come here and split, game 5 is a clinch game.
3-1,
oh, yeah.
Then it's over.
Going to Arca.
That's why I say like every home game is a must win, no matter what happened in these first two games.
Yeah.
I don't even want to face the prospect of maybe I'm just telling myself it's not a must win because I don't want to like just think about that for the next few days.
You know, they just got to go out there and they've got to play a better game. Better floor spacing, better ball movement. That's one thing that I thought really stood out is that the way the Warriors move the ball and pass the ball is much better, was in that game much better than the Cavs. Now, we've seen great Cavs ball movement games, and it seems to be a very much so a, you know, when the Cavs are going good, everything looks easy. When the Cavs aren't going good, it just doesn't look good.
No, and I don't think the Warriors looked particularly good in game 3 and 4 against the Thunder. They looked like they were broken.
Yes.
It's just they're a little bit more resilient. I mean, the team went 73-9. This is a good team.
It's a good team.
It's a historically great team.
It's a big game on Sunday. Big game. All right, Justin Gilbert, 1:30. We'll talk Browns. If you want to talk some Cavs as well, we can do that. You can call us 216-578-0850 at JDUBLL4s, J-double-4s. Says, any suggestions on where I can listen to a radio show on the Browns? That's what he just tweeted me just now.
We'll get there.
15 minutes. The Cavs are in the NBA Finals. Yes. The NBA Finals. It was game 1.
And the Browns
yesterday.
Are off until Tuesday.
The Browns are not doing anything, and they golfed yesterday.
Yeah.
So we're going to give you Browns content, but we're also going to keep it relevant here with the city of Cleveland.
It's called the hot button.
It is a hot issue. I don't think it's going to be a 2-hour Cavs show, but I do think that it is something to discuss. Now, I did read somebody said they should put Channing Frye in. Let me go around Channing Frye like he was a door.
That would be ugly.
Yeah.
That would not be good.
No, Livingston's a matchup nightmare, but he's not as good as he showed last night.
Of course not. And he's really struggled in that Thunder series, though, because Russ just physicaled him up when he would come in on Russ. And the issue is he can just elevate over Delly or Kyrie, especially anytime he wants to. And neither one of them, Delly's not quick enough just to stay in front of him. So it's a little bit of a tough, this is a tough matchup series. And Barbosa's not that good either, but Barbosa's a guy that can get unconsciously hot in any game.
Yeah. This game was the example of the whole notion that role players are so much better at home than on the road, because the Warriors role players were about as good as they could have been, and I think the Cavs role players were about as bad as they could have been. And it just, that's how that game was
decided.
They just
get to go out there, though, and make it a new story starting on Sunday. All right, when we come back, 216-578-0850 is the way to call us. You can tweet the show at Nathan Zagura, at Andrew_Gribble, at Browns_Daily. Don't forget, this Sunday at 11 a.m. on News Channel 5 is Inside the Cleveland Browns. Then 11:30, Dog Pound Report. Me, Gribbs, Wilhelm, and of course, Andy Baskin. All right, 216-578-0850, CBD on a beautiful Friday in Berea.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Sir Andrew Gribble in for Matt Wilhelm today. Jason Gibbs in as always. Still to come, Justin Gilbert at the bottom of this hour. Takiyah in hour number 2 for the Friday forecast at 2:30. But let's go to the phones now. We've got Joe in Mentor. Joe, welcome to the show.
I just wanted to say a couple things about the Cavs' approach. First of all, we were playing power play basketball. You know, we had about 3.5 guys on the court that were effective versus 5. So any bench is going to look good against that. I was perplexed by Tyronn Lue wanting to slow the game down, when his biggest criticism of the team when he took over was that they were getting gassed too early and they needed to push things faster and so forth. And I thought, well, we were in great basketball. We were actually more effective and threw them off kilter. As far as Shumpert goes, I disagree. You guys were pretty critical of him. I thought he did a good job of being very, very disruptive to Curry. But I do agree with you with the body language. We need to show more poise. And we also need to not hesitate when we have basketball. You know, Plus is famous for that, not willing to make a quick decision on whether to shoot or to pass, and way too much dribbling. So I do think they're going to make some significant adjustments. But probably time to pull out the Aaron Rodgers soundbite where he spells out the word back.
Relax. Yeah, it's not a game that you came away feeling great about, and I think there are reasons for that. I thought it was actually played with some pace. I think too often we would get down there, and then we would end up pounding the ball. There was a lot of pounding the ball, not moving,
little
backing down
leg.
Slowly. What?
Little stanky leg.
A little bit of the stanky. Yeah, there were, and a couple of those jumpers were. There was 1-3 that I was like, no. That is, you just knew it didn't have a chance.
I think there was almost, it was like a concern. It was like whenever the Warriors made a couple threes in a row, got that lead up to like 7 or 8, it was like the Cavs were almost in like damage control mode. They just didn't want the game to get out of hand. And they were trying to play to stay within 8 rather than playing their own true game and letting the pace pick up a little bit. And it was almost like they were too concerned about the game getting out of hand early.
You know
instead
what?
Of playing their game.
Andrew, you make a great point. I just called you Andrew, so that's kind of
weird. It's like I'm talking to my parents.
Yeah.
He is Sir Andrew Gribble.
Yeah, but it's Gribbs.
Yeah.
The biggest thing is you got to coach and play your own game. You can't be setting everything up and changing everything to combat Golden State. Like, you have to come up with a game plan for you that forces Golden State to change what they're doing. We shouldn't be changing what we are doing. And I felt like there was a little bit of that last night as the game went on.
Well, it was interesting in the post game, just listening to Kerr and the moves that he was making. And yes, I felt that in many ways we were reactionary, but I have a hard time after watching this playoff run thinking that the Cavs are better when Channing Frye plays less and shoots less. Give me more Channing Frye.
Yeah.
Channing Frye can shoot that basket.
He missed the first one, and then we just didn't see him again. It was a great look, too.
It was a good look, and normally it's a look. I mean, he hadn't missed in about 5 months, so I guess
it's almost like with him, I'm almost worried that he's about to hit some like epic cold stretch now after this like crazy hot stretch.
He was 70% at one point.
Yeah. I mean, he's been unbelievable. It's like you want to ride this hot hand, but you're worried it's going to come to an end soon.
It's regression to the mean. It's a fact of nature. It's a fact of nature. All right, let's go to Jim in Akron now. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, fellas, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
You know, I'm a little frustrated about that game. I mean, I'm not ready to panic.
No.
But the officials were garbage. And the reason I say that is every time we went strong to the hole, and we didn't do it enough. You know, we got hacked and swatted and no foul calls. And those pretty boys, I mean, you breathe on them. And Curry, he's pulling all on the jersey and right in front of the ref, they don't call it. And we didn't kick the ball out to JR enough. JR, he's a streaky type of guy that can literally take over a game.
Yeah.
You know, when he's making his shots, I mean, his game just goes up to another level. And, you know, I don't understand when Tristan was kind of playing kind of crappy in the beginning, and I think we should have put Fry in. And, they said, oh, well, Fry and Love play the same position. Well, why can't you play them both? Because, you know, it's not like Tristan was doing a lot of rebounding early. He was getting burnt. So to me, you know, drive to the hole and have Fry and Love on the wings and JR. And we need to, I think we just need to be physical. And I wouldn't be afraid to, like, throw an elbow at one of them little pretty boys and bust them up. You know, knock them off their game.
Again, I think, first of all, let me start with the officials. The Cavs shot 10 more free throws than the Warriors in the game. The fouls were basically even. It was 17 on the Cavs, 16 on the Warriors. And people like to make that call. But this is playoff basketball. And I will say this. When you're watching playoff basketball, you never think your team is getting the calls because there are probably fouls that could be called on just about every play in the NBA if you were looking at it through that lens. Do you know what I mean? It's a physical game, and I like they let them play physical. The Cavs lost because they weren't efficient on the offensive side of the ball. They shot under 40%. The Warriors shot about 49%. It's easy to see when you do that in the NBA, you're not going to win.
Yeah, and I think it's also a little bit skewed people from a viewership standpoint because most of the Cavs layups were contested. Whenever the Warriors got pretty close to the hoop, they're wide open.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that when the series shifted.
And we missed a lot of layups,
When the series shifted to Toronto and the Raptors won games 3 and 4, the Raptors went something like no foul shots until midway through the second quarter. And I think Jason Lloyd of the Akron Beacon Journal tweeted it. This isn't a product of the officials. It's the product of the Cavs defense. So maybe you would see, maybe it would look maybe equal out a little bit more if you're contesting more of those layups at the hoop.
At the hoop, and the Cavs weren't. I mean, there were so many times uncontested dunks that we saw in that game. We've got Dave in Worcester. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, listen, I want to give you a call because I've been listening to this all morning about, you know, the Cavs and where they're at and how they played. And if you look at three quarters into the game, we're up a point, guys. And if you start looking what happened to that, this is where coaching, I believe, makes a huge difference. And we always talk about what Lou's going to do, and he gets into the playoffs, rookie coach. And we stopped running the offense. We're not spread. We could have brought Fry in. And with Irving coming down, one of the stats that I was seeing that when he dribbled up and pulled up to take the shot and didn't pass the ball, he was 0-for-6. And whether LeBron kicks Irving in the butt and says, listen, we got to start playing team ball or not, if you look at what Kerr did, when we went up a point, what did he do? He broke the board. He was so mad at him.
That was a great move. What a powerful punch that was.
Exactly.
That's hard plastic.
If you look at Lou, what did he do? I mean, he never got them back in line and said, guys, we're not playing Cavs ball. The reason why we got to where we were, because we moved the ball, we had open shots, we spread out, and we hit the three. We just got out of our offense.
I don't disagree with your assessment at all. I think coaching, you know, this is Tyronn Lue's first rodeo. This is not Steve Kerr's first rodeo, and Steve Kerr is shown to be a pretty darn good strategist and coach in the National Basketball Association, and I think that was on display last night. But ultimately, it comes down to the guys on the court executing, and the Cavs didn't execute as well as the Warriors did, even though the Warriors' superstars struggled mightily.
Yeah, you know, the more we talk about this, I'm actually feeling better about Sunday. I think there's he reminded us that this was a very good game midway to late in the third quarter, and one run just changed the entire complex of that game at the end. I'm feeling better. I've talked myself back into it.
Yeah, but at any point did you feel – I know we made that nice run and got took the one-point lead, but was there a point where you felt good in that game?
No, but I'll go back to last year against the Warriors. I don't think many teams feel good most of the time they're playing the Warriors. Like, I only felt good throughout last year's series, probably in the first half of Game 3, and then the second half of Game 3 where the Warriors came back but didn't finish it, I was miserable, and they just kind of hung on. Game 2, they just kind of grinded that game out, so I never felt great about that one either.
Yeah.
So maybe that's just the way the Warriors are. You're never comfortable.
Let me ask you, did you feel there was a stretch in that fourth quarter where I felt that the Cavs were fatigued, where they were not running up and down the court with the same zest as the Warriors, which they should have had more rest. But when you look at it, the starters all played, other than Tristan, who played 31 minutes, 36 for JR, 38 for Kyrie, 37 for Love, 41 for LeBron. On the other side, Curry played 36, Green played 40, Klay only played 24 in this game.
Yeah, foul trouble.
He had the foul trouble early. It was Iguodala who came in and played 36 minutes for them off the bench, Livingston 27. And can we not let Bogut get wide open 1 foot shots?
You have a career high, they said, or like in the finals, playoff high or something.
10 points, 5 of 7 from the floor.
I just think that building and that team is a team that can break you pretty quick with the way they're able. You know, it was even like when the Cavs like sliced that big deficit in the fourth quarter, like 9, and then Curry and Thompson make back-to-back threes. And it's just like a mentally frustrating team to play because they can wipe out deficits in a hurry and they can extend leads in a hurry. Faster than any team in the league, and I think that can mentally fry you by the end of a game.
And guys, I heard Riz mention that this morning. Have you ever seen a team that can go on a run as quickly as Golden State can?
When they were on fire. But they do, and even when they cut it, what, from 20 to 11, mm-hmm. we made, what, 3 straight threes?
Yeah. Yep.
And then all of a sudden it was Curry hit that crazy step back, then Klay hit one, and it was 17 again.
It's over, yeah.
It was over. It was a good night, Irene. That was the walkout shot. It was good night, Irene. All right, when we come back, we'll talk a little Browns. We're going to hear from Justin Gilbert, who spoke with the media yesterday at the 17th annual Cleveland Browns Foundation Golf Tournament, which was a lot of fun. Big thanks to Westwood Country Club and everybody who helped us out there yesterday. A lot of players, a lot of alums were in attendance. Everybody's having a good time. And then a live auction that raised a lot of money to help youth and education here in Northeast Ohio. Justin Gilbert will be on the mic when we come back.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Justin Gilbert been getting a lot of praise from this coaching staff, from his position coach to his defensive coordinator to the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson, to other players who are asked about him, doing everything that they have asked, and somebody that has made significant strides here in 2016. He's got a blank slate with Hugh Jackson, and he's a guy we haven't heard from yet. That changes right now. Here's Justin Gilbert from yesterday's 17th annual Cleveland Browns Foundation Golf Tournament speaking with the media.
Justin, the coaches have had glowing praise of you this offseason. They're really, you know, excited about you, and the vibe sort of is clean slate, fresh start kind of thing. Is that how you feel about your situation right now?
That's how we've approached it since we've been back, and the coach has been pretty clear about starting fresh and having a brand new start and just not looking in the rearview mirror and just going straight forward from here on out.
How does that make you feel?
It feels good.
And, you know, when we talked to Joe Haden last week, he said that he sees sort of a different feeling from you or a different vibe from you because you know that Hugh has your back, you know that Ray Horton has your back, and also that the players and the veterans kind of are supporting you. Were some of the guys too hard on you in the previous couple of years?
I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about the past at all.
Well, what about the present? Do you feel that now?
I'm getting a great feeling from the coaches and the guys now. Everything's been very positive, and we're going to try to keep it that way.
What did it mean to you when Hugh told you that he wasn't looking in the past at all, and that whatever you did moving forward would kind of mark how he looked at you as a player and a person?
That just let me kind of know what kind of guy he is off top. And he hasn't changed since he's been here, and he's been, relaying the message pretty clear every day. The thing that we want to do here is win, and that's what we're working to do.
How valuable is it for you to get a lot of the work with the ones, but Joe still recovering from the ankle?
It's been pretty good, and I want to try to continue to get those reps even when he comes back. Whether we have a rotation going in and out, going to try to, continue to try to get those reps with the ones.
Greg Horton said that the coaching staff asked you to change your stance, and he was really impressed that you were able to do it really quickly. What did you think of that adjustment? How do you think it'll help? Do you feel comfortable in it?
Yeah, it's comfortable. It was just something I was being a little lazy with the off technique, and I know it's a stance that most of the guys do. It's just I was trying to do my own thing, but once I switched it, it kind of just became a habit, a good habit of backpedaling. So, it's just something that stuck on me now.
Is it just? Can you kind of explain to us, because we don't play corner? Like, mm-hmm. Does it make it quicker? Or, what does tightening up the stance do for you?
it's a little bit different from press where you're playing off with your steps. It I would say it does make your steps kind of quicker when you tighten your stance a little bit. Yeah.
Did anybody try to make that switch before in college or the first couple of years?
No, not that I can think of.
These coaches are really hands-on on the practice field. Even Hughes working his way around the field and working with different position groups. How do you as players, react to that? And is that something that you're used to?
It's something I'm used to coming from college with. Kind of dealt with the same thing from Mike Gundy. A guy that can relate to all of his players and really, really fired up every day that we take the field. He motivates us even before we take the field. When we're in team meetings when he's just talking to us. So he gets us prepared and ready to go every day.
How confident are you that you can – live up to your first round status and get out there and start some games and contribute?
I'm very confident that we'll get the job done this year and we'll win.
Mm-hmm. You excited to have a little bit more contribution wise on special teams this year, maybe a little more active?
Say it again.
Are you excited at the possibility of having a few more opportunities on special teams this year?
Oh, most definitely. Wherever they need me to be in order to make plays, whether it's on defense or special teams, I'm all in.
Chris Tabert mentioned you were one of the guys that could be returning kicks. Is that something you want to do, considering you had success doing that last year?
Most definitely. If my number's called, then I'll be the first one to jump to the spot.
How good of a kick returner do you think you could be if you did it all the time?
Only time will tell. I don't know.
Yeah, but you told us last year you want the football in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
They're willing to give you that expanded opportunity. That's got to give you a little extra juice, wouldn't it?
Oh, most definitely. Also, don't want to burn yourself out, but hey, if we're winning games and it's helping us win games, then I'm all for it.
How about just with Joe out, just having the opportunity to be in there right now every day with the ones and working opposite Tremont? How is that helping you in terms of getting ready?
I think it's helping me a lot, especially with the new defense and getting the reps that I think I need to get. I think I'm coming along pretty good.
How drastically different is Ray Horton's defense?
I would say it's very different from what we've been playing in the past, especially with the flexibility of playing press or playing off, where that's the last couple of years we've been pressing a lot. So I think it'll be a good changeup.
What advice did you have for Ogden?
I haven't really got a chance to talk to him one-on-one outside of the building yet, but I just gave him my number yesterday, so I'll get a chance to talk to him.
I saw the owner stop you and talk to you for a second. What was his message?
That the team's going to need me this year, and proud of the way I've been working, so just continue to head in the right direction.
Ray Horton told us that you had a family tragedy, and when you came back, your teammates really embraced you and were supportive. Can you tell us just about that? How much did that mean to you?
That meant a lot, especially, it surprised me at first when I first walked in, the way they greeted me, but to get that kind of love from your teammates, it makes you feel right at home.
That was Browns cornerback Justin Gilbert, and if I'm not mistaken, nor is Bob in Millersburg mistaken, those are the sweet sounds of Jason Gibbs really stepping up your question asking lately.
Yeah, you know.
Five-tool player.
But there's a bunch of writers that have a lot of things that they got to get in. So I don't like to step on toes unless there's something I feel like we might be missing. That's why I asked the Beiner question. You know, yesterday we talked a little special teams. I thought that, you know, Justin wasn't having a good day with a couple members of the media asking questions. So I lobbed a little softball to loosen him up again.
I thought he handled himself very well.
He handled himself quite well. But
I thought he sounded good. He's a guy that it just kind of strikes you after seeing him here for 2 years. He's a guy that needs to be loved up a little bit. And I think that this coaching staff, while they're going to be tough on him, they're going to love him up a little bit and make him feel secure that if he goes out there and does what they ask him to do, he's going to get where he wants to get. And I think part of the difference with this staff compared to last year's is with this staff and the proven track record of success for the guys that are coaching and what they've coached and the guys that have gone to the Pro Bowl under them or teams that have won Super Bowls under them, that I think for these players, when, you know, they say to him, look, Justin, if you do A, B, you told me your goals. Ray Horton sat here and said Justin Gilbert shared his goals with him. These are your goals. They're doable, but this is what you need to do. A, B, C, and D. And if you do that, you'll achieve your goals. And I think it carries more weight with these guys this year.
Yeah, and I would make the argument that there's no player on the roster, both offense or defense, that is benefiting more from a new coaching staff than Justin Gilbert. And that's not a knock on the old coaching staff. It's just that when you have a guy who you've seen underperform his first years in the NFL, your mind's going to be made up by year three on the guy. Whereas now he's blank slate, coming in and able to show it. They're seeing this guy with his raw athletic potential and trying to work with him. After year three with another coach, they might have given up and moved on. But I think that they're treating him like as if he's a rookie on this team and kind of molding him that way and putting him in a spot where, outside of Joe Hayden and Tremont Williams, I think it's wide open.
I think they look at it too, and they have a lot of confidence in themselves as coaches. They say, this is a primo block of clay that just wasn't molded properly before, and it's still that same primo block of clay, and now we need to mold it and get the best out of it. And I think that's what they feel they can do.
Yeah, and with kind of the rookie contract situation, it's, you know, clock's ticking with trying to mold this guy into someone who can help you out, whether it be as a third down corner, whether it be as a fourth corner. And then ideally you want him in a position where maybe it's not this year, but maybe next year with Hayden, another year in the league for Hayden, Tremont Williams, another year in the league for him, you know, then you need him to really step up.
I think if he has a great camp and looks ready to play in every down role, I think he has an opportunity to start this year. I really do. Can he do it? That's the question.
Right.
That's what we'll find out.
It's about maintaining, because I think we were hearing some similarly good things about him at this point last year, and then it just didn't carry over into training camp.
Right, and if it does, when you just look at the team and the decisions that have already been made and the obviously what they're trying to accomplish with this team, you would imagine that if they feel Justin Gilbert can start and play for this team at cornerback, that he's going to do that rather than Tremont, who is in his 30s.
Right. I mean, I think it's just a long way to go to get to that point. Because
A long way to go to get to that point.
But I agree. If he proves to be one of your top three corners, you want to get him out there and get him some experience, because at this point in his career, he doesn't have the kind of experience you should have after 2 years in the league.
And there are plenty of corners, by the way, who started their careers off slowly.
Oh, it's a tough position to break into.
Stars.
Yeah, it's real tough. I mean, you've looked around the league. I mean, guys like and we haven't seen it yet, but like someone like a D. Milner with the Jets. I mean, the guy's just never been the same. Been dealing with injuries and just struggling. I mean, it's a tough position. I think even the Fuller guy from the Bears has had his ups and downs,
yeah,
even though his ups have been pretty good. But it's kind of the opposite of running back. It's hard to kind of take a league by storm as a rookie cornerback.
Yeah, it is a difficult position to come in and, as you said, be dominant right away. And we certainly have to hope that at some point they can do that, that Justin Gilbert can come in and be that guy here in his third season. It used to be three seasons for wide receivers. Remember, it was a third-year breakout?
Yeah.
Maybe it's really more apropos to corners, because certainly in today's NFL, receivers can come in and be dominant right out of the gate with the spread offenses that are run in college and the application in the National Football League. All right, when we come back, we're going to wrap up hour number one here, 216-578-0850. We can talk Browns. We can talk Cavs. Talk about the city of Cleveland, the fine city of Cleveland. We can do that up next.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Just let this sit and soak in for a second. Are you familiar with this, Scribbs?
Not at all.
Rebecca Black, Friday, Friday.
Oh, is that this song?
Oh, yeah. This is a sensation. This is
Scribbs, are you having a boy or a girl?
I'm having a girl.
Yeah, she's going to like this stuff.
I know.
Get used to this.
No, if she's like my daughter, she'll like the Zack Ryder version of this.
Right, I think I've only heard the chorus.
Here it comes, Ray.
The people in the car with her. There's a music video.
Yeah, that's when she's got to figure out which state she's going to take.
Like, who are all these people?
Those are her friends.
Like, are they really her friends, or are they, like, cast members for, like,
they might
video?
Be paid friends. They might be acting as friends.
Yeah, I've never seen the video.
It's creepy.
See, this is what she's figuring out. Listen. Gotta make my mind. Which seat can I take?
I think it's creepy that it's a girl knows it's for a purple. $95 million views. $95 million. Good God.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun, 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 fun. Looking forward to the weekend. This is the best. Now she's going to break down the week. Thursday was yesterday. Today it is Friday.
It's important to get the information out there. Yeah. Just
it's
educating
important
the
to know your days.
Day comes after that. Yes. And then she had this guy come in and do a little rapping with her.
Who's this guy? We never made it this far.
We never made it this far. You're just letting it go right now. This is all courtesy. Michael Hensler needed this. He wanted it. And now he's got it.
Wait, you were on?
Request all day long.
We were just on there?
Oh, this is on the radio? Yes, okay. This is happening. This is happening
right
now. Yeah. Oh, you knew.
Who is that guy?
I don't know.
Why is there a rapper?
Listen, this song was big enough that it was parodied at WrestleMania 27.
Yeah, that is true.
By Zack Ryder and Snoop Dogg.
I just stepped into a whole new world today. I mean,
that's how big that song. That was. So WrestleMania 27 there on 32 would have been about 2011. I mean, that was before viral stuff was like, now stuff goes viral in an instant. That was one of the first, I would say, ever viral video phenomenons.
Yeah, I missed that.
I don't know why.
Gribble, don't worry. You have a whole like 18 years of this coming your way.
Yeah, that's. I'm going to be educated in this department. I'll be more prepared. Bring me back right before training camp.
The main Ryan said, "Oh God, I love hate that Friday song. Party and party and yeah,
did you
fun,
see Hensler's
fun,
video
fun.
After we started playing it?
Unbelievable.
He goes, "Oh boy, here we go. Some guy falling asleep driving. And he obviously hits something, and he ends up in the backseat."
It's pretty impressive that guy was able to pull that off.
Yes. TMK at Man Among Guys.
He's not happy with this show.
I wouldn't say that. He just said, this is the weirdest day of Browns Daily
No,
ever.
He did not. That's not what he said.
He just said it. This is the weirdest day of Browns Daily ever.
You're left out. On my Twitter screen, he has another word between weirdest and day.
Weirdest, worst. Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Gibbs.
My
no
bad.
No need to broadcast that one. Sorry, TMK.
Come on. It's interesting.
Oh, Chris Totten says there's a Jimmy Fallon version of the song that he just sent a video to me of.
Really?
On my mentions. We'll have to check
the
that
main
out.
The main Ryan 85. Oh, God, I love slash hate the Friday song. Party and yeah, fun, fun, fun.
It is pretty amazing. It is. The real BV wants this to be your song, Sir Andrew.
Fight that power, Andrew.
Does that mean I can only
Andrew again?
Does that mean I can only come on Fridays?
No.
No. Oh, okay.
No. We're not going to limit you. We believe in no limits to your greatness, my friend. No limits to your greatness. So, by the way, 538 put out an article today about how Kyrie and Love were basically destroyed defensively in this game. Love gave up an effective field goal percentage of 66 points. Oh, I'm sorry. Kyrie gave up an effective field goal percentage of 66.7%. Love 61.5%. And Love's efficiency on the pick and roll, despite the way as bad as Curry and Thompson were, was apparently atrocious.
And I thought that was one of Love's better defensive games. I saw him step out a few times against Curry, make a few plays. He was at least trying. It looked like on defense. Maybe
I didn't have any problem with Kevin Love's play.
This is the final paragraph from 538. Cleveland's offense had its own problems. In 22 possessions, Andre Iguodala held LeBron James to 1-for-2 shooting. That's pretty amazing. But it's still a good bet that it'll course correct. The biggest concern for the Cavs is that any gains they make from improved shooting will drain out of the holes in their defense. I was concerned when they were in Toronto and they were basically being beaten by two guys, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. And this Warriors team showed in this game that they have more guys that can step up at any given moment and put the biscuit in the basket. But I do think that the next game will be much more competitive on Sunday. And if they can pull that one out, all bets are off. We're ready. Hey, Al Saunders walking by, fired up, determined, focused, energized, as he always is. Trucker Dave is holding us accountable for the 93 million views of Rebecca Black. Even if we clicked on that song, watched it through, and clicked on it again, and that's all we did for our lives, we couldn't get it to 93 million views.
Bob in Millersburg, the Obama 2009 oath has 41,000 views, less than half of the Friday song.
I saw that. Well, 41,000 versus 93 million, significantly less.
Power of the people.
Power of the people. All right, we're taking requests for songs.
Since we got calls, too.
Oh, we do right now?
Yeah.
Who?
Let's see. Should we go to Grant in Cleveland?
Grant, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, one thing I wanted to ask, I have not heard a lot about offensive line position battles. It sounds like there's this four-way scrum for right tackle. And we're hearing more about the kid from Baylor, Drango, than we are Sean Coleman, who was drafted two rounds ahead of him.
So
can you break down center,
sure,
right guard, and right tackle, and you know what you're seeing out there in OTAs?
So, we'll just go along the line. Left, obviously, Joe Thomas. Left guard, obviously, you've got there Joel Bitonio. Center, Cam Irving, and I don't think it's competition. I think that's going to – I mean, every position's up for grabs, but Cam Irving has really seemed to have cemented himself in there at the center position.
Right, and I think the only guy that is really just lined up at center behind him is Mike Matthews.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good player, but I think that you're going to see Cam Irving receive every opportunity to kind of have a redemption season at center.
Yes, right guard – John Greco's job. Austin Pastore's been actually working there more than he has at tackle and could potentially push him there. The right tackle position right now, I'd say, is more of a three-way race. And you can tell me if you disagree with that, Andrew, with Alvin Bailey in the lead, taking most of the first-team reps. You also have there Spencer Drango, who we've heard a lot about, who's looked pretty good, and then Sean Coleman. The reason you haven't heard about Sean Coleman is because he hasn't been practicing. He's coming back from injury. They're working him back in. So once he's ready to go, then maybe that battle heats up. But I think right now it's Alvin Bailey's job for the time being in competition with Drango and Coleman.
Yeah, and you wonder about, you know, Drango and Coleman. I think a lot of the experts projected him as a guard at the NFL level, but I think they're at least giving him a shot to show that he could play some right tackle. I think also with his experience level compared to Sean Coleman, he might be the most 2016 ready of the two. I think he's a seasoned guy, has the body, the makeup that you like out of that position. But he's someone that I think eventually, if this season, if he doesn't win that starting job, clearly one of your good backups that can play multiple spots. But
yeah.
The difference you're seeing in what last year, how Irving started, he was moving all around the place. So far, we've seen Drango just at that right tackle spot. And then maybe you wonder later, if you realize you might need him to play multiple spots, then you start getting him involved to some multiple positions.
I like Drango, and I know the coaches have liked what they've seen from him so far as well. He's a guy that last year in the Big 12, when you think about how often teams throw the football, and Baylor in particular, before they lost their quarterback, he didn't give up a sack. I mean, that's a pretty impressive. One of the top graded offensive linemen, obviously won a lot of awards at that position as well. So that was one of the guys that I know that the Browns were very excited to be able to get where they got him in the fifth round out of Baylor.
Yeah, and I know offensive line, you have success rates all over the place, but you look around the NFL, there's a lot of fourth, fifth, sixth rounders starting in some serious roles. So it's one of those positions that you can't write off because of where the guy was drafted.
It might be the position that has the most on the offensive side of the ball of guys from later rounds being very, very effective.
I would say it's the position.
And even undrafted.
I would say it's the position in the NFL where you're going to see the most first-year starters that were day three picks.
Yes.
Like, you can draft someone in the fourth round, I'm not saying Drango could be ready to take that role in game one, but it's certainly plausible because this guy, a player like him, is seasoned, and physically I think he looks the part. I just think Alvin Bailey's been impressive to me.
I think
he looks like a road-grading right tackle that you can have in an offense that's going to run the ball a lot.
Yes. An offense that certainly wanted, one of the reasons that they made the move in the offseason is they wanted that road grader at right tackle. They wanted that to be a source of power in this power run game, and Alvin Bailey certainly has looked that way thus far. All right, hour number two of CBD coming up when we return here. If you've got song requests, hey, we'll take them. We'll obviously go a little higher or lower when we come back, which is Gibbs' favorite game. They did the NFL top 100 players of 2016. We'll go through those guys. Friday forecast at 2:30 with the kid. And your calls and tweets, 216-578-0850 on CBD.